How do I approach talking to a new partner about our sex life, what we like, etc.?
I don't know. Sorry.
Well, I think we were talking before about sometimes a nonverbal cue can work. The other thing could be to throw it on that person first and say, what do you like? And then hopefully then there'll be a reciprocal thing, or when there's a pause, say, well, are you interested in finding out what I like? I mean, I don't know how one handles that.
I mean, it can be very nonverbal. It can be very nonverbal. Can't move to the left or whatever. I don't know. Yeah. Or moving his finger or whatever. Yeah. I don't know. Some people will talk, and some people the talking isn't useful. And you just...
Yeah. Okay. How do I get out of my head about how I look, skills in bed, etc., so that I can really enjoy a moment? Again, that's part of that. It isn't easy sometimes, and yet that's, you know, for me, you know, learning to do that was also, you know, so that I can enjoy myself. My partner enjoys the fact that I'm enjoying myself. If all I'm doing is being a performer, it comes across to the other person.
You know, there are times when I really am going, okay, and after this, then I'm going to make that artichoke, and then I have to do one more email, you know, and I'm like right in the middle of that. And so it's about self-forgiving and pulling myself back to the present. Self-forgiving and pulling myself back to the present. It's just about anything in life for me. I have to just keep... I was a person who, when I first learned to meditate, my therapist made me put a rock on each corner of my meditation blanket because she said I was not grounded. I am so into my head. Blah, 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 blah. You know, they say the circus is down. And that's the most ones when we are about to make love. It doesn't. It's like, ah, blah, 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 blah. And what is he doing? And then the phone rings. And then our dog. We have a 3-year-old dog. Who, when he was 1 and 2, he just wanted to join in, you know. And still now, sometimes he'll lick my toes or something, you know. So all that is such a distraction. Now we give him a bone and put him in his little crate, and he likes that. I don't know. It's just about, you know, that old thing, be here now, be present, and be self-forgiving when I can't think.
When you start to lose weight, how do you deal with the lust and feelings that come up with sexuality? I know writing helps, not that much, but what are other helps? Well, I mean, you know, there's that whole sublimation thing of you know, if you've been eating and you put everything down, you know, things tend to come up in other areas, and sexuality is one of them. You know, just and I may be wrong, but you know what I see in all 2 and 12 step programs is you put down one thing and you find yourself wanting to pick up something else, whether it's shopping or sex or, you know, or masturbation even, you know, because there's a part of us, like you were saying before, that wants to run away and turn down the volume in your head.
You know, and I would, I mean, there are a lot of people in OA who don't exercise, you know, so are you taking care of yourself in every way? And I don't know. I guess as I lost my weight, I was very sexual before I lost my weight. So I don't know if it made me more sexual. It made me feel more vulnerable, maybe. Yeah, so I don't really have an answer.
Yeah. Let me ask a question here. I guess the group, you tell me. We've got it, I think, until 4 o'clock. We got lots of questions, but I also feel I wanted to leave some time for open sharing if people wanted to share. Let me just get an idea. By a show of hands, are there people who are interested in sharing? Anybody?
Or how about if someone... Oh, you raised your hand. You'd be interested in sharing?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's a possibility. Or how about this? If someone gives us a question and we're not sure... Mm-hmm. Could we just say, is there anybody here who'd like to take that question? Does that sound useful? Because, I mean, I think there's this greater wisdom.
Yeah, it's not like we're not, you know, the experts on any of this stuff, and by any means, you know. Okay.
Do you want to let the woman...
Yeah, would you like to share something?
Would
you like to
share? Because
you come
it may make people feel braver.
Yeah, that's the other thing. And again, there, you know, if you haven't looked around for a while, we've thinned out a little, so, you know, you don't
we've
have to feel...
weight.
No, I mean, there's less people, so you can feel free. You know, do you feel it? Yeah.
I'm moving around and have a bad staff.
Okay.
Hi, my name is Jess, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
John, you want to bring the mic?
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Say that again.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I just... hi, I'm Jess.
Yeah,
Jess. Compulsive reader, bulimic. I just want to... I'm in a really interesting place in my recovery. You know, for me, when I came to program, I'm almost abstinent 3 years. And the fact that I cannot eat cookies, cakes, pies, throw up, diet, binge for 3 years is a miracle. Food was the first thing I picked up when I was a toddler. I even had compulsive eating issues, it seems like, when I was in my mother's belly. I mean, there are stories. But I really thought this was it. If I could get this under control... I used to think if I could just get the weight under control, but every time I would lose the weight and gain it, but it was never about the weight. When I was 60 pounds thinner, I felt the same way as I did when I was 40 pounds heavier than I am now. So when I came in here and realized the binging was such an issue and just the obsessive thinking about food was such an issue, and I thought if that could just be lifted, then I could live a bigger life. But what I came to understand, for me, this is my story, much more was revealed. And I'm a big proponent, not of being cross-addicted, but of working multiple programs. And I've gotten so much relief out of understanding that for me, food was just the first thing that I could pick up. For me, the food stuffed down this thing in me as a child that could never get enough love and attention. There just was not enough. And I just, you know, Bill W. has this essay on emotional sobriety that's just beautiful and brilliant. And there are so many rooms that can help us, and I am in some of them. And I just encourage anyone who's having issues with sex or love or romance or being an emotional or sexual anorexic, isolation from sex, like depriving yourself of sex or love is the same as depriving ourselves of food. But there are places that use these principles that can help you. And if anyone wants to talk to me about my experience, you know, outside of the rooms, I'm happy to do so. But I'm in this place where I know it's not just about the body, but I keep wanting to go back to, well, if he doesn't like me, it must be because I'm too fat. And even if he says you're beautiful, it's because this, that, or the third. It's hard to get my head out of that cycle of it's your body. And maybe it's because if it's in, it's your body, I think that can be fixed. Mm. And if it's something out there in the ether, it's just not fair. Mm. And that's really hard to deal with. But, you know, the 12 steps, like I heard, helped me not to not have problems, but to move through the problems with more grace than I did before I knew the steps. So thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. Yeah.
I'm like Phil Donahue here.
Anybody else want to share?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all. You just sort of stand there. You don't have to be, you know.
I'm Colleen. I'm a compulsive reader.
Hi, Colleen.
First of all, I just want to say thank you. I really appreciate you guys coming on. So, Popeye, I've been abstinent about 10 years. I'm maintaining 160-pound weight loss. And, I'm so effing uncomfortable at this point. And I knew I was. I knew I wanted to come to this workshop, and I didn't want to come to this workshop. You know, so I was like, you know, there was no traffic on the freeway. I came to Valley. And I took an outreach call right before I came in, and I said, there, yeah. I said, when God wants you there, you get there. Like, yeah. It just happens, yeah. You know? And so, you know, what I've learned is that I don't run from the uncomfortableness anymore, and I don't have to eat over the uncomfortableness. But it doesn't, you know, it's that polishing that has to happen. And I come from a history of, I was molested at a very, very young age by my father. And so I have a lot of baggage. It's really just a lot of negative thinking and false sense of how things are, perceptions about things when it comes to sex. And that's really all it is. And I have to remember that. You know, a big book talks a lot about, like, we have to let go of all our old ideas. And so this is, you know, I've been in relationships and out of relationships, and I still remember the very first time I was with a man that he saw me completely naked, extra skin and all, and the next day I was like stark raving mad. Like, and he looked at me and he was like, are you okay? And I'm like, you know, I literally felt like somebody ripped my skin off, you know, and it's like, and I still have sort of an innate fear when it comes to sexuality and even making it okay to be a sexual woman, you know, and I just wanted to say that, like, one thing that for me is I found that I don't have to eat over it. You know, I don't have to put on another 40 pounds or go out of the rooms or whatever, because I've learned, like has been mentioned, that whatever it is, with the steps and with the fellows in the program, I can walk through it. And I've also sought out outside help. I found that, you know, I needed to. Like, y'all weren't going to help me fix it. Wasn't enough. And, you know, as much as I get really down on myself, and I can always go back to, like, it's about my body, because even being in a healthy body weight for, I don't know, like 8 years, like, I can still make it about my body. It's something wrong with it, you know. Because in my mind, sometimes it's easier to obsess about that than to really deal or walk through what I need to walk through or feel what I need to feel. And very much thank you for that self-forgiving and that self-compassion, because that's so essential in getting that I am where I am at this point, because this is where I'm supposed to be. I'm not supposed to be somewhere else. If I was supposed to be there, God would get me there. And, you know, I've noticed in being in the rooms for 10 years that a lot of us deal with these issues, and, you know, there's probably some connection there or whatever. And I think it's awesome that we have a forum to at least open up about it. But mostly I just wanted to say, for anybody who might be feeling uncomfortable at all, to get that you don't have to leave here and eat over this. Because you just don't have to. And, you know, you can live through the uncomfortableness, like was mentioned before, like being in the uncomfortableness of not having whatever that food was, or not eating that addictive substance. I can be in the uncomfortableness of feeling whatever it is I need to feel. And again, for me, it also just comes back to just trusting that I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be, and I'm dealing with exactly what I'm supposed to be dealing with, and that my God is bigger than whatever feelings I have or uncomfortableness. And so when the next relationship comes along and I have to, you know, not have to, I am given the opportunity to learn some new lessons, that I'll be able to do that. And I mean, it's just, I'm just so grateful for this program, because I didn't have any way of living before, and I would be over 400 pounds, and I would be, you know, into other substances, because, you know, when you get to over 300 pounds, the food really stops working at some point. But anyways, I just felt like I need to share this.
Come on up.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm Suzanne, aka Mimi, and I'm a compulsive reader.
Hi, Mimi.
Okay, I wanted to come to this program, and I'm up here for a question, okay? Sex and intimacy, okay? You said there's more to sex than the act. And I'm honestly clueless. What else is there? That's what I'm asking. What else? Just give me some little.
Yeah.
I need some. What else is that? And intimacy, I have a problem with getting close and staying close. Yeah, I'm part of dealing with that one where when they come at me, gag me. When I get them, let me hold on for dear life. That's where I'm at. But really, I'm really asking the whole room, everybody, sex act, and what else is it? That's my question.
Okay, well,
did
somebody else want to answer that, or do you want to
come back with that, talk about that for them? That sex is more than
there's a lot of things that you part of sex, other than sex rules. That could be part of the foreplay, and it can be touching, it can be a lot of touching. It can be looks. It can be the way somebody escorts you in or out of a room, holds a chair, brushes up against you. Sexually relating to you, and it can be done in a very sexual way. And so. It's And with the intent of arousing a sexual response. So there's a lot of things that can be done in that vein that can be done in public or in private with the that would lead to possibly a sexual experience that we would fit into that typical sex act that we were referring to in the question, I think.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That was in like that. My husband might send me an email with a couple of
codes.
They, you know, the beginning of something.
I've also heard it said that, like, sex is the act of sharing ourselves with another using the instrument of our body. And so often, I know in my history, I was using the instrument of my body but not sharing myself with another. And also I've been in the position of wanting to share myself with another, but I was just giving myself. The other person just wanted the instrument of my body. And so sex as a whole experience, for me, ideally, is when it's the connection, the intersection of spirit and body. You know, it's a three-legged thing, too, you know, emotional, spiritual, and physical.
Yes. Well, hang on, sort of. Is this another question, or is this
just more in this?
Okay, sure.
Oh,
I forget. You want?
Hi, I'm Charlotte, and compulsive overeater, also 100 pounder. But for me, sex, and this is where I'd like it to be, in its best state. I think it's a way to reach God, and so that I'd like to. When I do resume that, I'd like it to be with someone that I could connect on that level. But to me, that's the ultimate.
Could you guys hear her?
Yeah. Well, and I'll just say that, you know, like you said about it being made up of a lot of things, other than just the act, the fact, you know, that I make sure my wife knows I think she's attractive and I desire her on any given time, you know. We're at a Shabbat dinner last night. We're playing with our feet under the table, you know. And you know, the first commandment in Judaism is be fruitful and multiply, and it's supposedly a mitzvah to have sex on the Shabbos. And so, you know, we call that a shebang. but just the whole idea of letting her know, I think I'm attracted to her. Or and again, this could be somewhere else. She's going off to work, and I go, wow, you look really great, you know. And I mean, it's not sex itself, but it's more of the letting her know I'm really happy that we're together. And
it's a continuum.
Yeah, it is. It's part of an overall thing. Yes. Question. Hopefully.
Well, I'm going to say I'm Terry, but also I'm his wife.
Uh-oh.
No, but this is really what I wanted to say. What did I want to say? I'm one of those girls or women that like funny men. That's what attracts me. And so I ended up marrying a comedian. And a big part of our relationship is being able to play with each other and to be able to make jokes. And we have running jokes that have gone on the entire length of our relationship. And we have things that the two of us think are hilariously funny and other people would probably think are really sick. And we have, you know, just a lot of private play and happiness. And I think, and I want to say that our sex life is part of that. It's part of that play and creativity, and that's what's really special about it. It isn't like a doing it right or doing it wrong, or you know, it isn't about any getting a letter grade or anything like that. It's really about play. It's another way of playing together, and that totally works for me. I don't think I've ever really thought about it this way, but I don't know. Does it work for you?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Guys, if you're ever married, the correct answer is yes, dear. you're right. I'm sorry. Yes. Do you want to come up? Okay. Hi, Susan.
I've been in program for a really long time, and so I know I'm a relapser. But and a lot of it comes from, you know, I feel I was molested or incested as a child. But I've always, though, been attracted, you know, wanting to be in a relationship with a man. I've always wanted to be, because I felt very needy and more comfortable with men than women. And that's where the intimacy part is for me, that I'm in a relationship now with a man that for 10 years that I get a lot of comments from people in the program like, well, aren't you going to get married or aren't you going to, you know. And since I'm in my first year of abstinence, I don't want to make a sudden change. And I'm comfortable with him and he's comfortable with me. And what it comes down to is he's a good friend. And that's what it always does, because I can be really possessive. My first husband, my only husband, was my first love and from high school. But he was abusive, sexually and physically and emotionally. And so I was, you'd think I'd be afraid, but I still was, you know, entering into relationships. So my higher power took care of me, and I wasn't in one for 12 years. I kept working the program. I was very lonely, but I did other things. And I wanted to be in a relationship, but I really feel it was God was saying no, because I needed to repair myself. You know, I was really affected, and I didn't know it. A lot of denial. But the man I'm with now, though, when I get, he's like, he does his things, and, you know, and his family comes very first for him. And so do mine. We both have children. But what I turn to it all is when I get very possessive and I want to be the only one, I want to be, you know, the main person. Mm. Then I go, what would I do? I would do the same thing. I would go take care of my kids first or my grandkids. But also know that, he's told me I'm his best friend and everything. He's not my best friend because I use people in programs to be my friends because I know that's, you know, he doesn't really understand about program. But I just feel like that's what would a good friend do? Or what would a loving person do? Because I don't know what that is, but I try to learn that from people in the program or people at my church. And then, but I try to do that, you know, act as if. So all I'm just saying is intimacy to me is more because we're older. I'm 65, he's 63. But he's had some problems with, you know, being able to perform. And I know that that's not the main thing because I had that before. I had, you know, whatever. And it is about, you know, just being loving, touching, and being a friend. And he's there for me. He really, when my mom passed away, he was there for me, supportive. But I still like, oh, I want him to be more this. But I know, you know, in the 12 and 12, it says, what can I give to a relationship? What can I do instead of what I want? But that's the disease, you know, with the food. I want this, I want that. And so I'm just learning. But it's still hard for me. I have to shut my mouth and just because I want to complain and say, well, why don't you do this for me? Why don't you, you know, or whatever it be. But, you know, and when I've been going through this change of being more abstinent and the sexual feelings are coming out more, just the needy, the wanting other things, not just food, I realize, he had started to say to me, you know, God, maybe you should find someone else. Maybe I'm not. So I started saying, yeah, I am picking at him. Because I heard that I'm in Al-Anon too, and people were saying they pick on their husbands or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I just see that, yeah, I'm picking because maybe for whatever reason, I don't know what it is, but I'm decided I don't want to do that. I want to be loving because he has been to me. So that's all. And it's just one day at a time because I'm not ready to be married either because I have fears for sure. But,
okay. Thank you.
Just walk. I'll just. Michael, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Michael.
Something just occurred to me when people were sharing. I was thinking about the concept of like being perfectly imperfect, and how like if everyone was perfect, they'd be like circles, and then how would they match up with anyone else? Whereas like being imperfect, you're like a puzzle piece, mm-hmm. and then you can find a matching puzzle piece and like connect. And I don't know, that just occurred to me, and I thought other people might get something out of that. So thank you.
That's cool. Yes.
I'll just stay.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll just let it stay.
Oh. Hi, I'm Tracy, compulsive overeater. This is kind of a big day for me because
And I really want to share because I want to recover, and I've wanted to share this with meetings, and I haven't yet. And I think somehow I know one person here, but other than that, it's easier in a room of people I don't know. After almost 20 years of marriage, I'm separating from my husband. He's actually, I think, temporarily moving out tonight, and we're going to try a temporary separation and see. And what's really coming up is that when I look back at the self who I was 20-something years ago, and it's so funny because with things you were saying, I realized it's like I didn't notice him. He said hi to me 22 years ago. I don't know if I would have noticed him because I wasn't picking the guys I wanted. It was the guys who noticed me. And he's a wonderful man. He's a wonderful father. He's very funny. He's the guy that everybody loves. Part of the problem is he's the guy that everybody loves and all the women love. And so it's been a lot of ups and downs in the marriage where I think I married him partly because I felt like guys had wanted to have sex with me and this guy wanted to be my friend. And I didn't know that I could have both. And it was safe for a lot of years. And having kids and the breastfeeding and having that comfort and being mommy and all sorts of stuff that I was able to push down my feelings and push down my needs and maybe punish myself. And because what I realized is college for me was drinking, smoking, shopping, having sex, eating, every addiction I had. And then I met him and it was like, I'm beginning to realize it's like the buffer of the extra weight. It was the buffer of this fun, great guy who wanted to do stuff with me but didn't necessarily want to have sex with me. And, you know, as I've gotten older and realized, and I think a lot of this is being in program too, and I'm also a therapist, so going through therapy school for the last 8 years and turning myself inside out, that I do have needs and it's okay. And that what he does, and he acts out with emotional affairs and some affairs and other women, that he tends to minimize and I push down because I think I don't matter or it's not important or it's okay because I'm bad because I overeat and I spend too much money and so it's okay what he does. And it's come to a head about a year ago. And it came to a head 10 years ago, but 10 years ago I had little children and I wasn't able to say get out. And I wasn't able to look at myself and I didn't have the support of people in the program and I didn't have people telling me, you're a wonderful person and he's got his problems, you can't fix him. And after 3 years in program, I finally realized it's like, he can still be a wonderful person, but I can't change him and I don't have to punish myself. And so it's very painful, it's very painful to love somebody and, you know, watch them leave and try to figure out what that relationship's going to be. But, you know, to say it's like, you know, I can't keep depriving myself of intimacy and somebody who wants me and feeling wanted and being afraid that I'm going to go into my addiction with sex because I feel so needy or feel have been, my sponsor's always saying it's like, you know, certain foods, if I don't eat those foods, I'll go crazy with them because I feel so deprived. Well, I don't want the same thing to happen with sex, so I'm, you know, reaching out for help with that. But I just wanted to share because I feel like this has been a 10-year plan for me. When this happened 10 years ago, he had an affair. I said, I'm going back to school. I'm going to be able to support myself. I'm going to do something I love. And my friends are trying to say, look, this isn't what he's been doing wrong. You've been setting this up for yourself to have a different life. And you've tried, and you've gone to therapy with him, and you've tried to work on these things, but it's time. So I just wanted to share for anybody who might have these kinds of experiences and, you know, that I'm through program, I think I'd be okay. So thank you.
That's sometimes one of the hardest things is you can have two people that are perfectly good, but just not good mixed together, you know. The old Rodney Dangerfield joke, she was an earth sign, I was a water sign. Together we made mud. do we want to answer some more questions? Anybody else want to share anything?
We can also end early.
Do you want to end early?
Do you feel like that's enough? That if you had, or do you want to go, raise your hand if you'd like to go all the way to 4. Raise your hand if you'd like to go, leave early.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Michael, you're allowed.
Well, we have some questions here. Maybe I'll try and take some of the yellow questions. How's that? I just want to try and find some that there tend to be a lot of duplicates in here that, you know.
Which feels good to me, not alone.
Yes, exactly. Very, very much so. I just want to try and find something that.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Yeah.
I don't know if you speak about like self-intimacy, like how you connect with yourself. Mm-hmm. Or do you see that as part of the process or anything?
The question is about self-intimacy and how you connect to yourself. Are you talking about sexual self-intimacy?
No, I'm talking just in general.
I know that was always one of my hardest problems. I mean, I think part of my problem was really knowing how I felt about things, because I did have that Selig attitude, and it took me a long time to realize, because I had so not... You know, I had so lost myself in other people that I didn't know how I felt about a lot of things. There were certain things that I did that, oh yeah, I like to do this, and I realized, no, she liked to do it. You know, when I think about it, I was ambivalent. I might not have hated it, but it wasn't, you know. And to get to know yourself better, it's hard. I mean, part of tearing, we were talking before about, when we were thinking about various topics here, was the idea of having problems with same-sex relationships. Not homosexual, but meaning men who have trouble having relationships with other men and women who have trouble with other women. And I know for me, part of what I had to look at was, I don't feel like the quintessential guy. Okay, there was a great movie a couple of years ago, it was more than that now, with Kevin Kline called In and Out. It was about a guy who is outed as a homosexual, but who he's like, I'm not gay. And near the end of the movie, it turns out he is, but I thought it was a lousy focus group ending, because I think it would have been a much richer movie if he hadn't been, because it speaks more to the roles, the role of a man. A man is supposed to like football and hate musicals. Well, I like musicals, okay? I'm not a big fan of football. Does that mean I'm gay? No, it doesn't. It just means I'm a different kind of guy, and I do have trouble getting together with the guys. I sort of feel a little like the odd man out a lot of times, because I don't fit in. I can talk the talk with sports and stuff, but it's not my, I live all and end, be all and end all and things. And there is a part of me, I mean, my first marriage, the woman I married was a little on the androgynous side. And part of what I realized later, many years in therapy, was because she wasn't super feminine, I didn't have to be super masculine. And that made it was much safer. And now it's okay. I'm a guy. There is no standard rules, you know, and it's the same with women. I don't...
So self-intimacy, that's an interesting question. When years and years ago, when I was in the midst of trying to deal with my chronic fatigue syndrome, and I had an acupuncturist that I love, she highly recommended meditation. I was in my early 30s, and I looked at her like she was nuts. Because to me, the idea of being quiet for any period of time was more frightening than the idea of preparing to climb Mount Everest. It was just, it was so far out of my comfort level, I couldn't even tell you that. And when eventually I began to meditate later, I can say that that's real self-intimacy for me, because what I do is, my therapist who taught me how to meditate has learned that the best time to meditate is after exercise. And so I generally go to the gym, and then I find a little room in my gym that no one else knows about and they let me use, so that I'm all exercised. And whether I want to or not, it becomes part of my routine. And it is the hardest part of my day. You know, it's the hardest thing to check off, to sit still. But about... out of every 100 tries of sitting down, I would say there are about 10 times that I get there. Whatever there is in meditation, where it's such amazing, it's like deliciousness. Is all I can describe it. It's a wonderful, beautiful deliciousness. To me, that's self-intimacy. Some of that is just being still. The other thing is, I think it may be slightly cultural, this self-intimacy, because... So my husband is on the board of directors of a school that is project-based learning, where when the kids learn about physics, they make a skateboard. And then they learn about physics that way. Every year the kids have to get up and defend what they've learned, starting from kindergarten. I think kids nowadays, not all kids, not in all schools, and not raised by all parents, are encouraged to have more of a sense of self. Who are you? You are responsible for this project. I think the way I was raised was, here's the book, read it, tell me the test results, and nothing about, well, how do you feel about this? And in the same way, medicine is changing too, so that it used to be take this and feel better, and now it's, what's your blood type, and what kinds of food do you eat, and do you have a food allergy? I mean, it's much more tailored. Who are you? That's a question maybe that our culture is asking, and allows me to learn self-intimacy. Thank
I had always wanted to play the guitar, and I played as a kid and didn't practice, and played a little bit in college and didn't practice. My husband bought me a guitar 10 years ago and didn't practice, and my neighbor's a guitarist, and she said, "Boy, your guitar is getting really angry sitting in that case." And I thought, well, this is not going to induce me to play. Now I'm afraid to open the frickin' case. But about a year and a half ago, and I came home from an OA meeting, and I have no idea why, I opened that case and I started playing. I played for an hour. I started taking lessons, and I practice every day, and routinely. And I got up this morning, and normally I practice at night, right? Because I got to get my practice in before I've gone to bed. And this morning I got up, and I was playing, and I was holding the guitar next to me, and I knew I was coming to this workshop, and I just felt so in love with it. And I loved holding that guitar close to me. And a close friend of mine is a cellist, and she said, one of the great things about a cello is you can feel that vibration against your body. And, you know, you're holding it between your legs, right? I'm trying to think, can I play my guitar between my legs? Like, wow, let's get that going. But, like, I got it. I just got it. It's Colleen. Mm-hmm. I got it. That I mean, it felt so intimate. And I finally, and I love that you brought up this question, because I thought about it this morning. I thought, I finally gave myself this gift. Like, that's real intimacy for me, to play the instrument that I always wanted to play and give myself the gift of doing it every day. So that's what comes up for me when I think of self-intimacy.
Now, I'm going to say something about, in line with that. It's not about sexuality, but it is about self, sense of self, which is that I'm a writer, but so every day I send my food and kind of a 10-step off to my sponsor by email. And I take it very seriously. I do it before anything else, and I do a lot of work on the computer. But I was feeling so dry, and I wasn't always doing my creative work until I made a commitment to write a poem a day and send it off to a friend who sails around the world. And I, for me, I have to be accountable, so I won't just write a poem a day. I have to be accountable, and I send it to him, and he and his wife depend upon it. They live on a boat. They open their computer every day. They read it right after dinner. It's like they're whatever. And having done that now for 3 years, I feel more complete, just exactly as you describe it, which is the creative side, to give whatever that means in your life, whether it's dance or walking or whatever, there is something more than that dry stuff that I do. Mm. It's a blossoming. Yeah.
That was nice. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
So it just makes me think of, like, just when I feel connected to my higher power, and just when I'm, like, hiking or swimming, or I like to cycle, and I also do art and stuff, and it's just those peaceful times when you're connected. It doesn't have to be a huge part of your day. It can just be a moment, but or even when you see some, like, a beautiful flower, you see something pretty in nature. I think it's looking at those times as the gifts and being very centered and still with it, for me, is what that's about. Because it's, you know, so many of those things are so private, nobody can experience that with you, and you don't need necessarily a witness for it, but if you can acknowledge it, I think those are those moments. So that's what came up for me.
Well, you know, in sexuality, the word sensual is really, you know, more about the senses, you know, about experiencing. It doesn't always have to be about sex. It can be about what are the things that give you joy, you know. I remember when I was over in how they have questions. Boy, do they have questions. Questions and questions and questions. But one of the last ones in the spot, maintenance questions was, what gives you joy? And it was the question that stumped me, because I had to really sit and think about it, you know. And I think I had been so on the run and didn't want to have to deal with that. I didn't want to look at that, you know. So.
Okay, so just one thing I have written down left, which is, I have stopped comparing myself to someone who has sex for hours on end. I do not do that, and I've never done that, and I always wanted to. I wanted a guy who did that, and I don't understand exactly how they do that. But, you know, so I'm just not comparing.
Yeah.
So that's my final tidbit.
Well, yeah, and I would think that, to be honest with you, those who do, you've got to also question, isn't there an allegory there overeating? In other words, at what point is enough enough? You know?
I think they're just having more fun.
Anyway, do we want to end it up?
Yeah, I think so.
We have a great round of applause for us. Thank you, everyone.
everybody for coming and for staying, and the right people came and the right people stayed. I'm just delighted that you're here. And again, this is a wonderful gift from the Los Angeles Center Group. So we're really glad we could do this. And because we want to be able to keep this venue for workshops, we have to put this room back in order. And, you know, many hands make light work. This will take us about 5 or 6 minutes if we can have everybody. But we had tables set up and chairs around them and things, and we would certainly appreciate it. And there were some chairs that need to be schlepped upstairs. But we'd love to have your help just so we can, again, keep them happy at this church, because it's a very, very low cost and it's free parking. And we'd love to do more workshops. And we have more workshops planned. And I'm the workshop person on the board, and I'm also doing the workshops for the birthday party. So if you have ideas about workshops, and I want to chat with you about something, about doing something at the birthday party, one of the workshops we're going to do, I realized as I listened to April share, is we're going to do a workshop for people who have been in program longer than they have not. That is, you know, if you're 50 years old and you've been, you know, in program for 26 years, you have more program lifetime than non-program lifetime. So that's going to be one of our panels, and if you have other ideas, let me know. And again, is Patty, are you still here? I don't have my glasses on. Yeah, there she is right there. So talk to Patty or me if you are interested in finding out about some of these commitments that are available for the birthday party. Love to have you on board, and we just want to keep that birthday party engine rolling along. And Patty is great at getting the work done. But she needs some help.
Thanks to Sheila.
Here for Sheila.
Yay. This is just perfection. Thank you.
Do we want to?